You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I'm going to make him a movie he can't review.
It's B-Movies, thanks to Metze Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
See, there you go. Second time's a charm. I am currently sitting here with Paul Oremlin, who is the director, what do we call it, writer? Because, I mean, the film you made is, it's you, isn't it?
Yes, sadly it is.
The film is called 100 Men, and it is part of the New Zealand International Film Festival. It reflects on, is it 40 years of your history?
Yeah, it's about 40 years, yeah.
Through what lens shall we tell the listeners? What is the format, if you will?
Being honest, it's 100 men that I've had sex with, to be absolutely honest. But, I mean, that's obviously just a device to explore the story and, an interesting way to, I guess, explore huge changes over,
absolutely,
you know, my lifetime,
because
basically.
Personal history is also public history, so it's a really nice lens to look through. When did you first get the idea that maybe your personal chronology could be turned into a film?
Well, that's quite interesting, because my original intention, I wasn't even going to be in it originally. I'm been a director over many years, and I'm used to be behind the camera, so the whole idea of being in front of a camera, I freaked out. I don't even like being photographed, let alone filmed. And I'd been doing little interviews with people over the years, you know, mainly as research for documentaries I wanted to make. And when the Film Commission, New Zealand Film Commission, got involved, they asked us to do a test scene. So I did a test scene, and the head of the Film Commission, Dave Gibson, said, look, you've got all these fantastically brave people willing to appear on the camera, and the director's not even willing to put himself out there.
Yeah, what about you?
And then it went from there, in the sense that I had to sort of, like, you know, I said, right, I'll be in it. And, you know, obviously I'm open about being gay. And bit by bit I realised that I had to personalise it to make it come to life as a story. Otherwise it was just a list. So little bit by little bit, particularly through the editing, I realised that, you know, I had to own up.
Put a little bit of yourself in there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And how difficult was that for you? Because I know when you're... This isn't an insult, because it's coming from one myself. You like to be in control of how things are being made, but putting yourself on the other side of the lens can be incredibly daunting. Did it take a while, or did you?
Yes, it was. Look, it was great. I had a lot of help, in the sense of, you know, filmmaking is collaborative, and I had, you know, fantastic, you know, the producer. I mean, for example, even just doing the voiceover, I've never done voiceover. I'm used to, you know, having fantastic people do voiceover. And the producer said, well, look, why don't we just get a friend to interview you, and we'll use that as the voiceover. So, you know, little things like that helped bring it to life. The editor was fantastic, you know, and he was a straight editor, and he had a whole insight. And he said, oh, I'd say, get rid of that, it's boring. He said, no, I'm really interested in
Right, somebody else's eyes saying, it might be old news to you, but for me that's really interesting.
Yeah, no, it was a joyful process, to be honest. I mean, after I'd sort of bit the bullet and said, right, I've got to appear in front of the camera, I really enjoyed it.
Now, I'm loath to give too much away, but obviously it is called 100 Men. And you do, in order to follow the history, which is both yours and the history of the community in New Zealand and all over the rest of the world, you chose to go through those men chronologically.
Yep.
With a few exceptions.
Yep.
As you were going through those men and trying to get in touch, did you hit any real roadblocks, or people who just went, I don't understand what you're doing, I don't respect what is being done?
I mean, obviously there are a lot of people that I've lost touch with, couldn't track down. Sadly, a lot of them have died, which is something, you know, we cover the sort of 80s, which is a very dark period. There were people who, like myself, just said, look, I don't like being filmed, and I had to respect that. And there were quite a few people like that. But one of the other things that was quite interesting was, you know, and this is something we try and explore in the film, you know, things have changed, and now gay people can be, you know, in all walks of life, which is fantastic. And in a way, there's a sort of almost respectability that, you know, is now available to gay people. And I found there was one person in particular who was a headmaster, and, you know, he said, well, look, I'm not sure I want, you know, my past on show, so to speak. And I mean, he's out and he's married to, you know, a boyfriend, so it's not that he's not out. But and actually they have an open relationship. And he said, well, will you be asking me things about that? And I said, well, yes. And he said, well, I'm not sure I really want that. My colleagues don't fully understand. And I think that was something we were trying to explore in the film, and you've seen it, and so you saw how, you know, it's something...
People's personal decisions about their layers of visibility and what they'd like to share.
Yeah, and, you know, hopefully it's something, you know, it's a film that, you know, I first and foremost, I hope, you know, gay people can relate to it and find it interesting, but it hopefully explores wider things and, you know...
No, it definitely does, especially in terms of a sense of community... And what a community having to hide versus a community being, pardon me, allowed to stand in more light, how that can change things for the good and for not so good, potentially a loss of traditions and things. Were you there at the ASB Waterfront Theatre, the 23rd? You've already screened it once in Auckland. How did that go down?
Oh, look, it was a fantastic experience. You know, it was just amazing to see the audience laugh and respond, and so many, you know, people came up afterwards, and so many men came up after and said, look, that was my life, and I really, you know, and just absolutely related to it, and, you know, and as you say, it is about community and family, and you know, there's a love story hidden inside it as well, and I think those things are really important to everybody, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have one performance left. It's on this coming Tuesday, August the 1st. It's at Academy.
That's right, 1:45, I think it is. Yep.
1:45, yep. And that is a significantly smaller cinema, so you should definitely get in and book tickets as soon as you can from the NZIFF website, nziff.co.nz. Are you going to try and take it elsewhere, possibly a limited run or onto... television or?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, I'm not sure that I've already, you know, we've discussed New Zealand Television screening it, and there's, you know, question whether they would, and
really?
even today.
Right.
And that's again something we explore. But we definitely are, you know, hopefully a possible little run here maybe. And, you know, obviously abroad because the film has a, you know, and it's playing, you know, gay festivals, Sydney, the, you know, Sydney Mardi Gras. I'm not sure if that's official yet, but they're hopefully picking it up. And there's been festivals in Los Angeles and the UK and around the world, so which is also fantastic because there was a sort of little sneak preview in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago, and loads of the gay men said, oh, New Zealand, the gay scene there looks fantastic, I want to come and visit New Zealand. So I just thought,
awesome.
Yeah, great to see New Zealand known for something other than just, I don't know, the Hobbits.
That's very true, though, because obviously because your life and therefore your story has not always been in New Zealand. It is a story of international relationships and an international life. So I think it would travel really well. It's an amazing piece. I strongly recommend that you all go to the website and grab a ticket. There's only one screening left, but all things willing, we will be able to see it again very soon in the future. Now, we picked a song when we were talking off air before. Is there any particular reason why we picked this song?
Well, absolutely. I mean, making films, you want to have fabulous soundtracks, but obviously you have to clear them, particularly if, you know, the Film Commission. It's got to be done properly. And I wanted Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, but they wanted nearly half our budget just
to
use.
That sounds about right.
Yep. So, unfortunately, there is a fabulous soundtrack, and Carl Stephen did some of the, you know, he's a well-known musician, and we did get some fantastic music, but not the Lou Reed Walk on the Wild Side.
It's all right. We can have it as our internal soundtrack as you walk into the Academy and watch the film. Thank you so much, Paul. All the best. And do come up and talk to us about your future endeavours.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been awesome.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked her way across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way. Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. She was everybody's darling, but she never lost her head. Even when she was given head, she says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doot 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 doot. Never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that passion. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doot doo 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 doo.
Movies. It's still me. Thank you very much to Paul Oremlin for coming in to talk about his wonderful doco, 100 Men, which you have only one chance left to see. It's this Tuesday, August the 1st, at Academy Cinema in the middle of the day. But hopefully we'll force him to make you be able to watch it in other ways too. But enough about that. Right now we are joined in studio with Penelope Noir.
Hi, I'm back.
Hi, guys.
I just missed you so much.
And we are going to, because, you know, this is her specialist subject, we are going to talk about one of the films in the film festival dedicated to design and fashion.
Yes, so I'm going to review House of Z.
House of Z.
Not House of G, but House of Z.
Oh, good old House of G.
And House of Z, of course, is Zac Posen's Italia. So, yes.
Is Zac Posen American?
Yes, he's American, born in 1980, so he's relatively young.
Yeah, that's crazy young for a huge fashion head.
Yeah, and this movie kind of talks about his kind of how he started out quite young and then his career from then on, that sort of thing. The director is Sandy Chronopoulos, I think that's how you pronounce it, and it's her first feature debut on the big screen. She's done stuff for Project Runway Spotlight, which was produced by the Weinstein Company, which of course is Project Runway.
Right.
And if anyone follows Project Runway, they will know that Zac Posen has been a judge, a key judge for the past like five seasons with Heidi and Tim and Nina Garcia.
So is he a good TV personality as well then? Has he got some good...
I think he has.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a really good looking guy.
He's quite good looking.
Yeah, and I think he's just got, he's got a certain charm about him. But I think this movie totally sums up Heidi's kind of mantra of one day you're in and the next day you're out.
Right.
And this kind of like movie kind of does follow that whole story. It's kind of like a riches to riches story. You know, he is wealthy. His parents...
So he does come from wealth. He's got
His father's an artist and his mother's a high flying lawyer. And he's got an older sister who's 8 years older than him. And he kind of, like, she becomes kind of his creative director and all that sort of thing, and it's all very family oriented. He attended St. Anne's School, which is kind of like an alternative school in Brooklyn. He grew up in Soho, which was still at that time where they had a lot of the cutting and manufacturing places for designers.
So he used to gone overseas yet?
No, and so he used to go and collect fabric, and you know, there's these amazing little videos of him sticking things on his head and designing little animals and
so lovely. Again, no spoilers, but there's some great home. Home video footage of him designing, was it potatoes or barbies or something?
I think at one stage some kind of weird ass kind of stuffed dog or something.
Yeah. And we all need to look good.
Yeah, and then he kind of went on to Central with St. Martin's and Parsons and all that kind of thing. But it was at St. Anne's that he kind of started out. He made a lot of female friends that became actresses, and they were his muses, and he was designing one-off dresses for them, and people like Naomi Campbell kind of picked up on it.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. And Johnny Versace. So it was kind of like pretty cool. And then his first show in 2001, he had Karen Olsen open for him, and other models in attendance were Stella Tennant and Sophie Dahl. And the people,
so the
that
big important crowd,
yeah. And he kind of like Anna Wintour attended because he was a friend of her son, so it was kind of like, in a way, he was already kind of established with the people he knew, and that's kind of where he kind of, that's where he kind of got his stardom in a way, because he kind of everyone knew that
he was connected,
yeah, that he was well connected and that sort of thing. But I think that kind of is also, you know, that thing where it's almost like tall poppy syndrome.
Right, you're under more scrutiny.
Yeah, so he kind of had that as well as people thinking that he was wonderful and that sort of thing.
Right. And Anna Wintour, for those who, the name sounds familiar but you can't place it. Anna Wintour, if you've seen The Devil Wears Prada, Meryl Streep's character in that is loosely based on Anna Wintour.
Yeah, yeah.
So scary woman with a lot of power.
Yeah.
Good on you.
The Dragon Woman, in quotation marks. The thing I didn't know is that in 2004, P. Diddy invested in the company.
Yeah, when music gets involved, musical entrepreneurs get involved.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Because a big period of Zach Posen's life, and you'd know more about this than I would, but money troubles. And then, as some labels often do, like diffusion. I'll do something for Target. I'll do something for Starbucks.
That was kind of like the demise as such. It was kind of like it was a very family-oriented company. They were all working together. His sister was right at the helm with him. And his mother was controlling a lot of things, and he started doing a lot of endorsements to get money, and of course he was feeling quite exploited by that.
And he'd be kind of oversaturated with Zach Posen everywhere.
Yeah, and there was some weird stuff that he was doing, like I think there was, I can't remember exactly, but maybe juice or something. and he was just like, you know, what the hell am I doing? And it kind of led to the family kind of breaking out of the company and him being quite heartbroken.
Family left him.
I think that it was kind of mutual in the end. He kind of had to make the decision.
Right.
But it was very hard for him because he was very, very close to his family.
This is like Beyonce all over again.
Yeah. And it's kind of that, it's also, this movie kind of talks about the fickleness of the media and the fact that one day you are a star. Yeah, and the next day it can be something as simple as like taking a bow at a show or something, and they get caught, you know,
fixated on it.
Yeah, and offended really easily and that sort of thing. But we were just kind of talking about it off air. At one point, there are some clothes that we're just going, ay caramba.
That's right. The reason I played the orb before Penelope came to talk to us is one of Zach Posen's shows. He was known for doing quite very simple, stylish silhouettes, and then he kind of got a bit pushed in the wrong direction, maybe a bit of smoke blown in the wrong places, and decided to design dresses that looked like walking clouds. In a weird way, not in a nice, lovely way.
And then there was the phase of, like, not understanding edit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was pretty crazy. Like, feathers out of everywhere. It was quite funny because Isabella Blow described him as the first bohemian outside of Europe.
Wow.
But the one where he has all the feathers and stuff, I was just thinking... It screamed bohemian.
But like any kind of artistic exploit, if you're not able to trust someone with objectivity and you're just kind of in a cycle of thinking your own stuff's amazing.
Yeah. If you've got yes men around you all the time.
Can I just interject here? Do you think sometimes these designers think, you know what, I'm going to see what I can actually get away with?
Yeah.
Everybody thinks I'm that fantastic. I'm going to make something out of... I don't know, like lawnmower parts.
Or
something like that, do you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden he was going, oh, that's the most fantastic thing I've ever seen.
Or that wonderful thing where, you know, even if you do doubt what you're creating, you've got so many sycophants around
exactly.
you. They're like, oh, I'll tell you it's amazing. Can I have a job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone saying, mate, that just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And which would you rather hear when you think about it?
I hear that looks ridiculous all the time. So.
That's why you're true blue, mate. Exactly. True blue.
Exactly.
Would you recommend it, Penny?
Yes, I think Zach is a likeable character. Like, there are parts where you go, oh, you're a little bit arrogant. But then you end up kind of loving him. He kind of learns his lesson. You think, oh, yeah, this is really cool. And the fundamental thing, I think, is that his skill at drapery and sculpture with fabric is unsurpassed. You know, like, watching him with the fabric on a form is just unbelievable.
He knows how it's going to move, right? Which is almost down to a thread level. That's quite crazy.
Yeah, and it's just so intense that it's really amazing to watch. And if you ever kind of like are interested in the construction of garments and things like that, all the shows bar the 6:15 one at the Civic tonight are sold out. So if you want to go, you need to get your tickets today.
Also, why not at the Civic? Kind of apt.
Yeah.
Particularly when he gets a bit fruity in his designs towards the end.
Yeah, but the last show that he shows is spectacular, and you know it's worth actually just going for that as well, you know. But I do love stories about designers and how they get their inspiration and how they grew up. I think it does lend to you know, the overall aesthetic. So I think it's definitely one for definitely people that are into fashion, but I think anything.
And if you're not into fashion, is it still a good kind of...
I still think it's a really good...
rise and fall and rise again story?
Yeah, and it's only like 90 minutes, 87 minutes.
Hey, guys.
I'm coping. You know? I could do that.
Yeah. All right, do you want to go?
Yep.
Go then, Rob.
Okay,
you and me, we'll go and see House of Z.
Yep.
I'm going to leave you with a song by Nina Simone about how fickle it is being a star. On you, Zach. Thanks, Penelope.
No problem.
Stars, they come and go. They come fast, they come slow. They go like the last light of the sun, all in a blaze. And all you see is glory. But it gets lonely there when there's no one there to share. You can shake it away if you'll hear a story. People lust for fame, like athletes in a game. They break their collarbones and come up swinging. Some of them are down, some of them are crowned, some are lost and never found, but most have seen it all. They live their lives in sad cafes and music halls, and they always have a story. Some make it when they're young, before the world has done its dirty job. And later on someone will say, you've had your day. Now you must make way. But they'll never know the pain of living with a name you never owned, or the years of forgetting what you know too well, that you who gave the crown have been let down. You try to make amends without defending, perhaps pretending. You never saw the eyes of young men at 25 who followed as you walked and asked for autographs kissed you on the cheek, and you never really could believe they really loved you. Some make it when they're old. Perhaps they have a soul they aren't afraid to bear. Perhaps there's nothing there. But anyway, that isn't what I meant to say. I meant to tell a story that I live from day to day. Stars, they come and go. They come fast, they come slow. They go like the last light of the sun, all in a blaze. All you see is glory. But if you don't mind being patient with my fumbling around, I'll come up singing for you. Even though I'm
station in the whole wide world.
B-F-M.
Say it again.
B-F-M.
Say it again.
B-F-M.
Yes.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.